You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello everyone, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and as promised, I am here with the runner-up selection for my Halloween episode. I ultimately decided to go with the Dnipropetrovsk Maniacs, but this one I promised to follow up with, and here we are. It's an unsolved episode, which it honestly isn't very common that we cover unsolved cases. We cover current cases, ones that have been solved that I find interesting, but this is actually entirely unsolved. And it's heartbreaking. And that case is the disappearance of Cindy Song. Also, apologies to everyone who may be able to hear my cockatoo in the background. He is getting ready to go to bed and he's very displeased about it. Before we get into that, let's just get some housekeeping out of the way because we did not actually do that in the previous episode. Again, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com, where you can find all of our social media accounts like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as our Patreon. If you're interested in financially backing the show, you can do so there or by going to patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And don't forget, you can go to wsdlove.com and from there fill out a really, really quick snarky survey. It takes all of 10 seconds. And then you're entered into a drawing for free shit. Everyone loves free shit, whether it's a sticker, true crime swag. Go there, enter, and then once every month, I will be picking someone to send something to, send free shit to. Coming up, guys, Brittany and I will be doing an episode on the Dateline episode on Lori Vallow that aired the other night. It was absolutely crazy, and we actually learned a lot of new information, which I thought the document dump was intense to begin with, but a lot of stuff actually surprised me from that episode. So we will be getting that out later this week as well. But today, this is the disappearance of Cindy Song. So let's get right into it. Hun Jong Song was born on February 25th, 1980 in Seoul, South Korea. She spent the first 15 years of her life there before her mother, determined to give her better opportunities in life, sent Hun to live in the United States with her aunt and uncle in Springfield, Virginia. She was extremely studious, and her high grades exhibited that work ethic. She was also a student athlete, playing tennis and running track. She fell head over heels in love with the arts, writing many blog posts about films, art, or music that she found personally meaningful. Hun was also fiercely loyal to those that she loved, but also incredibly independent. Her hard work paid off, and she was accepted into Pennsylvania State University, where she immediately decided to major in integrative arts, a degree that more or less combines science, engineering, and communications. In her later high school years, friends and family came to know her as Cindy Song. In October of 2001, Cindy was a senior hoping to graduate the following semester. She somehow had managed to work two part-time jobs in between her grueling degree program. She and a boyfriend, Richard Che, had gotten their own off-campus apartment at State College Park Apartments. Unfortunately, Richard had abruptly broken things off the month before, literally said, "I'm leaving, this isn't working, peace," and moved entirely out of the apartment. Cindy took it exceptionally hard, but didn't exhibit any alarming behaviors to those around her. It seemed to pretty much everyone that she was doing fine and realized that the next chapter of her life was just starting to come into reach. She got a new roommate named Youngu Kim, and the two quickly and naturally bonded, becoming friends. Not best friends, but friends to the point where they would hang out and talk. Cindy started going to therapy and also taking medication. And at this time, her blog posts began to reflect more personal aspects of her life, like her mental health struggles, her relationship woes, and also her ability or lack of ability, to love herself. She wrote very openly about these things. She focused on work and school and even applied to a graphic design internship for the spring semester and also bought a new computer for that upcoming endeavor. And most of all, I mean, remember, guys, this was back in 2001. She was mostly excited for the Britney Spears concert that she had just bought tickets to. Halloween was one of Cindy's favorite holidays, and that year she decided to spend it with two of her best friends, Stacey Paik and Lisa Kim. Her new roommate, Youngoo Kim, also known as Catherine, most of her friends called her Catherine, so that's how I will be referring to her for the remainder of this episode. Catherine was away visiting family in Philadelphia. Because of her busy schedule, Cindy had not prepared a Halloween costume whatsoever, so she decided to go with the easiest route. Pink top, white tennis skirt, bunny ears, and a homemade bunny tail. She also put on really long eyelashes. Later that evening, she met up with Stacey and Lisa, and together the three women went to the Players Nightclub, a local dance club that was popular with other Pennsylvania State University students. The club was hosting a Halloween party, and Cindy and her friends stayed there, drank, and danced until roughly 2 a.m. From there, they went back to Stacey's house to wind down and play some video games. After roughly two more hours, around 4 a.m., Cindy's friend Stacey Paik offered to drive her home, so the two got into her car and drove over to the State College Park Apartments after grabbing snacks at the Unimart. The two friends exchanged farewells, and Stacey Paik watched as Cindy Song exited the car and began walking down the sidewalk and then up the staircase to her apartment. Stacey then pulled away and returned to her own apartment. The night rolled on, and Catherine Kim, Cindy's roommate, returned to the shared apartment later that next morning, November 1st. It was empty. Cindy wasn't concerned, as the two didn't keep constant tabs on one another's schedules. Like I said, they were close, but not, you know, BFF close. It was after no one had seen or heard from Cindy Song for 2.5 days that people started to become worried. Missing work in class was so outside of her realm, and it became clear that something just wasn't right. When Cindy missed her Saturday shift at the Seoul Korean Garden restaurant, friends immediately called the police to report her missing. Police from the Ferguson Township Police Department came to the State College Park Apartments, interviewed Catherine, and took the report. Because it was on a weekend, investigators were not available until Monday. So we're already, you know, first 48, like we're already falling behind here. It wasn't until Monday that lead investigator Brian Sprinkle got the case. He interviewed Stacey Paik, Lisa Kim, Catherine, and other friends and co-workers of Cindy Song. After obtaining all of the details from Halloween night, they were able to discern that at some point after being dropped off, Cindy Song had likely made it into the apartment. Investigators officially searched Cindy and Catherine's apartment on Monday, November 5th. Again, that's 5 days, well, 4 days after Cindy Song was last seen. They discovered that the small backpack that she had with her at the club that night on Halloween night was stuffed under her bed. The eyelashes that she had worn that night were on the counter on the bathroom vanity. The Britney Spears concert tickets were pinned to a board in her room. However, some items were not present. Cindy's phone, ID, purse, and wallet were nowhere to be found. The lead investigator said, quote, "We know that whenever she left the apartment, she was wearing the clothes she had on that night. We also know that her purse, her pocketbook, or whatever she had with her that evening that contained her driver's license and credit cards were with her too, because we could not locate those in the apartment." Police quickly learned of the breakup with her ex-boyfriend, Richard Che, and he was immediately pinned to their radar. But they quickly cleared him, with Detective Sprinkle saying, quote, "There wasn't any indication that he was involved in any way." Police then started raking over Cindy's blog, trying to glean any information whatsoever that would aid in the investigation. Could she have run off and self-harmed, devastated by the breakup? That was unlikely. There were a few posts that caught their attention. A few posts highlighted her recent use of marijuana and ecstasy, but her friend said that she had just experimented and that she was far from being an actual addict. With her parents and extended family in South Korea, her circle in the United States was actually very small. Investigators then began to consider other options, such as abduction or something far more grisly. In fact, that actually became the main theory. Cindy's friends said that it was common for her to walk down the street to the Giant Food grocery store that was open 24 hours a day to grab a snack or dinner. This is a particularly common thing for her to do, even especially after a late night out with friends. So Detective Sprinkle checked Cindy's phone and bank records. There had been no outgoing or accepted calls, and none of her cards had been used. Investigators searched a heavily wooded area near Penn State University campus, and nothing was found whatsoever. It appeared that Cindy had just vanished without a trace. Then, 200 miles away in Philadelphia's Chinatown district, a terrifying call came into police. The caller reported walking by a car with a woman matching Cindy's description, hanging out of the window, crying and yelling for help. As the witness walked towards the woman, a man appeared, seemingly out of nowhere, and told her to leave. The caller gave police the description of the man: tall, slender, Asian, with black hair and olive-colored skin. Believing this to be a serious lead, they brought the caller in to assist with making a composite sketch, and one was made available also to the public. However, the witness ended up changing their story numerous times, so the police decided to let that lead go. And that was it. Cindy Song was gone. The police were left with a missing persons case with no leads whatsoever. There was evidence that she had made entry into her apartment and then left again. Where did she go? Did she make it to the grocery store? Was she abducted on her walk? The case went cold. This episode has been brought to you by BetterHelp. Are you having problems achieving your goals or finding happiness? Is the thought of the holidays too much and causing anxiety? Check out BetterHelp. It's professional counseling done securely online. And guys, it is an amazing service. You get matched with licensed professional counselors who specialize in things like depression, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, LGBT matters, and self-esteem. Once you sign up, you can begin communicating with your therapist within 48 hours. You can send a message to your counselor at any time, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly or video or phone sessions. You don't even have to think about sitting awkwardly in a waiting room again. It works on your schedule. And everything you share is confidential. Not only that, but it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is actively available. And if you don't believe it, you can check out the testimonials posted daily on their website, betterhelp.com. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/WSD. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp, H-E-L-P.com/WSD. Cindy's family had flown in from Seoul, South Korea, and began demanding answers from investigators. They cleaned out Cindy's apartment, which created a massive strain and issue in their relationship with the police, as police believed that they could have potentially destroyed evidence. And likewise, frustrated with the lack of an apparent active investigation, Cindy's parents founded the Coalition for the Search for Cindy Song with about 50 other Penn State students, alumni, and community members. They began pointing out the difference in responses between white women going missing, such as that of 13-year-old girl Alicia Kozakowicz, who went missing in Pittsburgh. For that case, the FBI immediately put 50 agents on it. 50 agents on the case, and Alicia was found 3 days later in another state. Cindy's case was initially managed by a single investigator, Brian Sprinkle, and only extended to a team of 6 state police. And only then, due to very public pressure from Penn State's Black Caucus and the Korean Underground Students Association, the police did not take Cindy Song's case seriously whatsoever. At least that's how it appeared to Cindy's family and friends. The group remained active for a couple years, putting up posters and publicly criticizing and pressuring law enforcement. In a retaliatory response, police actually ceased communication with Cindy's family almost entirely. In one of the interviews, detective and investigator Brian Sprinkle came out and said, yeah, we basically cut them off. It's actually really gross what happened there. Cindy's parents were left with no choice but to return to South Korea and attempted to resume their lives, albeit without their beloved daughter. Unexpectedly, 2 years later, in 2003, there was a potential lead. A man named Paul Weekly had been arrested and was facing a felony burglary charge. He turned into a police informant and began to talk, telling police about a handful of deaths in the state. 5, to be exact. Most of his intel had actually been accurate, and obviously, guys, he was volunteering all of this information in hopes of receiving a lighter sentence. Weekly claimed that one of his associates, Hugo Selensky, and an accomplice named Michael Kurkowski had abducted Cindy Song while she was walking down the street, mistaking her for a sex worker. They supposedly took Cindy to Selinsky's home in Hunlock Creek and kept her inside a walk-in safe where they took turns raping her for several days. Then they killed her. Weekly claimed that Selinsky had then murdered Kerkowski because he had kept Cindy's bunny ears as a souvenir and Selinsky did not want any loose ends. Weekly also claimed that Selinsky himself was responsible for the murders of at least 16 people. Paul claimed that Hugo himself had personally told him the story. And not only that, but the details Paul gave regarding Cindy's bunny ears and costume lined up perfectly with what investigators already knew about the case. Again, considering that a lot of his previous information had actually been accurate, police believed Paul Weekly. So investigators descended upon Hugo Selinsky's upscale Hunlock Creek home. It was huge. His home was huge and absolutely beautiful. And what they found shocked everyone. In the backyard, investigators found the charred remains of at least 5 people. So obviously, Hugo Selinsky was, arrested and taken into custody. It took weeks, but after the property was fully excavated, the number of bodies found had risen from 5 to 12. Cindy Song was not among them. However, 2 people were found, Michael Kerkowski and his girlfriend Tammy Fassett. Kerkowski was a pharmacist who was awaiting sentencing for running a black market drug ring, and he was also Selinsky's supposed accomplice who helped abduct and assault Cindy Song. Michael and Tammy went missing while Michael was awaiting sentencing, and police had honestly just assumed that they were both on the run. Investigators also found bone fragments in a burn pit that belonged to Frank James and Adai Kyler, 2 well-known drug dealers from that area. Again, Cindy Song was not located on the property, nor any of her personal effects. To top it all off, Hugo Selinsky had not actually moved into the home until almost a year after Cindy vanished. Hugo's attorneys also gave, basically a Loctite alibi to police. That pretty much got him off the hook for Halloween night. He was nowhere near where Cindy Song went missing. And that's when Paul Weekly's story began to fall apart. He crumbled under police pressure. Investigators had discovered that money was actually the motivating factor behind the murder of Michael Kerkowski and Tommy Fassett, not Cindy Song's bunny ears. The reason was that Michael Kerkowski had more than $60,000 in cash stashed in his house. Paul Weekly knew this and informed Hugo, who in turn promised him a cut of the money if they were able to successfully rob the disgraced pharmacist. After police confronted Paul, Paul admitted that he had in fact helped bury the 2 bodies after Hugo killed them. Except that's not all he did. Police were able to get Paul to admit that he had actually assisted Hugo with the murder of the couple. However, police were unable to discern who it was that pulled the trigger. But what about Cindy Song? At this point, Paul Weekly was sentenced to life for various felonies. He had had more than enough motivation for trying to avoid a possible death sentence for murder. So the police turned their resources and investigation onto Weekly. They searched his computer and found that he had downloaded dozens of articles about Cindy Song. Was he studying the details of her case so that he could create a false narrative to give police in an attempt to get a lighter sentence? Or did he actually murder Cindy Song himself, download the articles as some type of fucked up souvenir, and then finger Selinsky to cover his own tracks? To this day, November 14th, 2021, no one actually knows. Police immediately discounted anything that Paul Weekly had to say regarding the disappearance of Cindy Song, and her case went back to cold with no leads. Cindy Song's body has never been found. There's no physical evidence, no witnesses. Almost everyone attached to this case has moved on with their lives or passed away. And it's even unknown if Cindy Song's parents are still alive. The media has almost entirely forgotten this case as a whole. The only thing that still lives is a stack of 21 binders in the Ferguson Township Police Department, one for each year of Cindy Song's life, up until the day of November 1st, 2001. And that is it. That is where the story ends. And my heart goes out to Cindy Song's family. Speaking for myself, a lack of closure would be the absolute hardest thing in the world to experience. And I can't even imagine that level of pain of sending your child to another country for a better opportunity in life, only to have them go missing in the middle of the night, early morning. I cannot fathom that. And furthermore, her friend Stacy Paik, too. She is the one who dropped Cindy off and drove away before Cindy actually made it into her apartment. So what happened to Hugo Selinsky and Paul Weekly? Well, it took almost a dozen years, but Hugo Selensky was finally convicted of the murders of Michael Kurkowski and Tammy Fassett in 2013 and is serving a life sentence. And if you're interested in learning more about either this case or even Hugo Selensky, it is a wild ride. Like, while awaiting one trial, his first trial, he escaped from prison. He was inundated with love letters, like fan letters from women on the outside because he's considered attractive. He had three children by three different women. And even though he's serving life in prison, his children are basically not falling far from the family tree. One of his daughters was arrested for attacking and stabbing her boyfriend almost to death after a night of drinking. Who was she drinking with? One of her dad's victim's wives. Like, she really went out to a bar with the wife of one of her father's murder victims. Like, her father was a serial killer. Hugo Selensky is a serial killer. Another one of his daughters was kidnapped and tortured by her boyfriend before she was rescued and he was arrested. I mean, it's a whole mess. And it just seems like in terms of Hugo Selensky, anybody in that family, anyone attached to him for some reason, just gets involved in mountains of awful. But with the Cindy Song case, I remember seeing an episode of this on Unsolved Mysteries way back in the day. The picture of her in the bunny ears taken on Halloween night just hours before she disappeared haunted me. So I wanted to cover this case for the Halloween episode, but ultimately a different topic won out. But this case is just so terrifying. And I started going down the rabbit hole, mainly because of the Gabby Petito case, to be honest, of the amount of people that just go missing even at national parks. It's crazy. It was actually astounding. There's actually a website dedicated to it. If you go to NPS.gov, like NationalParkService.gov, NPS.gov, you can file the cold cases site, the cold cases page. And it is just filled with missing people. Either unsolved homicides or just missing people entirely that are listed as cold, as a cold case. I went down that rabbit hole, and then something, just while I was researching it, something reminded me of Cindy Song. So thank you for listening. It's an incredibly sad case. And to be honest, I can think of nothing more devastating than having a loved one just disappear in the middle of the night and have nothing, no sort of evidence whatsoever. So that's it for this episode, guys. Just a really quick mini episode here today. Again, later this week, Brittany and I will be discussing the Lori Vallow case, the Lori Vallow Dateline episode, where we learn a bunch of new information. I don't know about you, but I feel like the last month has just been absolutely insane and we're learning everything about everyone. So can't wait to discuss that. Also, I will be coming with a Suzanne Morphew case update. I've been following it lightly. I've been so busy lately, guys, not even going to lie, but I've been lightly covering it and reading the news articles on it. And I can't believe that Barry Morphew is suing literally everyone, like the investigators, the police, the attorneys, saying that he was wrongly arrested and accused. So that's going to be interesting to talk about. I have a lot of thoughts on that. And in case you're wondering if my personal belief on whether, like personal opinion rather, on whether Barry Morphew is going to be convicted of the murder of Suzanne Morphew, if that's changed based on a lot of information that's come out. Honestly, I think there may be a possibility that he is actually going to get off. So I will discuss that in a later episode as well, coming this week. But that is it for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can go to wesawthedevil.com, check us out, find all of our socials, our Patreon if you want to financially back the show. Go to wsdlove.com, enter really quickly, give us a 5-star review, and we'll send you free shit. We'll pick someone to send free shit to. Until next crime.